And now we're at this day where I got the call, and I'm so appreciative and honored. I never joined a fraternity in college, and now I'm amongst one of the coolest in the world.
I did it the only way I knew. I didn't believe in anybody's choice to go out there, and I wanted to do it clean. And I had an opportunity, more than one. I had an everyday opportunity to probably take the short path to a more successful year and escape the criticism from the media and being singled out as someone that's going to miss at least two or three outings a year.
I'm usually now at a loss for words, but today might be that day. It was pretty overwhelming to think about getting in the Hall of Fame, yet alone doing it in the first try. And it's been a humbling experience, one that you know how much I care about this organization. But those of you who know me, I've never really spent too many days thinking about getting in the Hall of Fame. And
I got paid to play the game that I love to do, and how many people can say that? I mean, I got paid to do what I love to do, and honestly, I very am humbled about that. And I would have done it for free, and I loved every minute of it. And I tried to go out there and play the game as if it was going to be my last game.
To discuss the recent Hall of Fame voting, we are happy to have MLB.com national reporter Barry Bloom join us. He's been a Hall of Fame voter since 1992. And Barry, when you gave us your ballot prior to the results being revealed, you said that this was the most difficult ballot you had to fill out. You voted for 10, the maximum, including the four that were eventually elected, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio, along with Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mike Piazza, Mike Mussina, Curt Schilling, and Jeff Bagwell. You also said that you could have voted for 17 if you had the chance. Do you recall the other seven that you would have chosen?
Oh, gee, off the top of my head, you know, the guys are in there like, you know, Alan Trammell and Lee Smith, Tim Raines, Jeff Kent. You know, that's just, Jake Harry Sheffield, you know, that's just among a few.
So by wanting to vote for 17 on this ballot, does that in turn mean you are in favor of expanding the ballots to where you can choose more than 10?
No, I'm not. Okay. You know, in fact, the baseball writers at our last meeting, at the winter meetings in San Diego in December, voted to expand the ballot to 12 spots rather than 10, which I'm kind of fine with. I voted for, but it's got to be approved by the whole board of directors, and I'm not necessarily sure that they're going to agree with us. You know, as I said in the blog that you're referring to, there are some years when you couldn't find six. I think you just had a real backlog this year between the great people who are on the ballot for the first time and the backlog of all the people who are not getting into the Hall of Fame because of the suspicion of using performance-enhancing drugs. And a lot of my colleagues can't get past that and vote them into the Hall of Fame. So you've got a stuffed ballot at this point, and it's going to loosen up with these four guys getting in considerably next year. I mean, I've already thought about it, and really, there's only four guys that I would really put on my ballot that have to go on my ballot for next year. And that's, you know, the two new guys, which would be Griffey and Trevor Hoffman. They're the first-year guys who I think should get in. And then Bonds and Clemens. And then the other six spots, you know, really are wide open. You know, I have an idea who I'd put in. But, you know, I think four of those are pretty secure. And I have room next year to put back in. You know, either Raines is getting to the end of his eligibility. And certainly Trammell, who is in the last year of his eligibility next year.
I want to get to Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. If I had been writing for long enough, if they had given me a vote, I would not have voted for Roger Clemens or Barry Bonds. Not because I think they deserve to be left out forever, but it's because I'm personally not ready to let them into the Hall of Fame at this point. I think eventually I would be comfortable seeing them enshrined. So in some ways, it's kind of like a time heals all wounds like theory. Do you happen to know if other writers share that sentiment, and are you accepting of that reasoning?
I have no idea. I mean, it's a very strange variegated subject, as you might imagine. Everybody has their own opinions about it and their own feelings. You know, my feeling is everybody in that era, it was the era that they played it. Everybody had a chance to use the drugs, whether they chose to or not. I don't know half the people who actually did. I'm sure that it's much more widespread than any of us want to believe. I think we probably already voted in players in the Hall of Fame who did performance-enhancing drugs. I think it really comes down to either you vote for all the players from that era or you don't vote for anybody. The only thing that really bothers me is that, you know, it seems like guys like Piazza, somebody like Piazza, who played within the shadow of the same era, gets more of a buy from the writers who are voting than the other players like Bonds and Clemens, who obviously well publicized had to go to court to exonerate themselves of perjury charges, which they both did. So. To me, it's either you vote for all of them or you don't. You know, I choose. It's part of the era. I think the Hall of Fame should note it on their plaques if they ever get in. I'm not for punishing anybody, and I don't want to be the jury and the judge on this. You know, these people, in particular, during that era, helped bring baseball back to popularity after the 1994 strike, and I'm not about to be the guy who's going to throw them under the bus now.
To me, and I'm sure to you, you can't find a reasonable person that would argue against the four that did get elected, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, and Craig Biggio, especially Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez. But we hear of voters that abstain from checking the box next to the surefire honorees, namely Pedro and Randy, so they could give a vote to the less heralded or to other people that they thought are struggling to get a chance. Do you see that more as a negative flaw with the process or with the particular voters who engage in that action?
It's the same thing if you vote for somebody in an election. I mean, all those guys who voted in Florida for Ralph Nader in 2000, plus probably Al Gore, the election, there was something like 80,000 of them. They decided to go third-party candidate with as close as it was. If just a 10% or less decided to vote for Gore rather than an alternative candidate, Gore would have been the president and it would have never gone to the Supreme Court. This is, you know, the society we live in. Everybody can do whatever they want within the process. It's everybody's individual choice. As far as my choice is concerned, I look for the best 10 people or the best people to put on the ballot in that particular year, and that's what I vote for. I don't vote for based on any expectations of what anybody else is going to do.
I want to run through a few players that didn't receive as much support from the voters as I had anticipated and get your thoughts as to why that was the case. We'll start with Jeff Kent, the all-time home run leader among second basemen, just 15.2% of the vote on his second year of eligibility.
I'm not really sure. You know, this is, you know, Kent's second or third year on the ballot. I voted for him the first time. I was shocked that he's been stable at about 15%. I think he's being brushed very much with the same, stroke with the same brush that the rest of the PED guys are in that era, plus his relationship with Bonds. I always thought that the biggest mistake the Giants made in the era when Bonds was still at his peak was not making an effort to re-sign Kent, because the two of them, even if they worked with each other at times and didn't like each other, they were great complementary parts on that Giant team that narrowly missed winning the World Series over the Angels in 2002. Hence, you know, when he went to Los Angeles as a free agent, the impact on Bonds was profound because just people stopped pitching to him. They always walked Bonds a lot, but in subsequent years with Pedro Feliz, Benito Santiago, and guys like that hitting behind him. Managers just walked him ad infinitum, 1 year record, you know, 232 times, I think it was, 120 intentionally. Think about that, 120 intentionally. Most guys don't even leave the league in walks with 100 in a given year. I've talked to Bonds about it, who he and I are pretty close. And I think he walked 3,000 times in his career. You know, basically, that's 5.5 seasons. I mean, again, with the playing the what-ifs, I mean, if you take half of that away, you know, the guy's hit between 800 and 900 home runs. Getting back to your question on Kent, I voted for him. I didn't this year because I did take into account that with the ballot this close and tight, I wasn't going to waste my votes on Kent, Sosa, and McGuire, who I voted for before, because essentially they look like they have no chance of getting in. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to ask every one of the 545 baseball writers who voted why they don't vote for Jeff Kent. I think his numbers are stacked. And I think I wrote this in a blog last year on my ballot blog. I mean, his numbers, both defensively and offensively, stack up with all the great second basemen who have gone in the hall lately. And that's essentially, you know, Brian Sandberg, even Joe Morgan was the epitome of everybody's second baseman. You know, Kent stacks up great against. So I'm not sure why there's no favor for Kent, so little favor for Kent in the voting.
Next person I wanted to bring up was Fred McGriff, consistent home run hitter, almost got to 500 home runs, but do you think that he didn't do it long enough, or he may have gotten obscured by some of these other power hitters during that time?
You know, no, Fred's a guy I covered. He's a great guy. He had tremendous impact to me on every team he played in. He was a very streaky hitter. He would go into these prolonged slumps for periods of time, and it was very tough for him to work his way out of it. Then he'd go into these hot streaks that were really phenomenal, and you couldn't get him out. There was no in between with the guy. He's maybe the most inconsistent power hitter I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But saying that, back in the day before the so-called PED era, 500 home runs, like 3,000 hits, and 300 wins were benchmarks that got players into the Hall of Fame. You know, Freddie finished at 493. He was pretty much done at 38 years old when he was released by the Tampa Bay team, where he finished up. It was kind of mid-season his last year. And I think in a different era, McGriff would definitely be in the Hall of Fame. Just like I've said, you know, in our last pre-steroid ballot, which I think it was 2010, Barry Larkin got in. He was the only one on the ballot we voted in. And had Barry been not gotten in that year and held over to these ballots, I don't think Barry would have ever gotten in. So much of this is people always ask, you know, why is a, you know, and I hear players say this too when they're on analyzing the Hall of Fame ballot process. It was a 15-year process. Now it's a 10-year process. There are some years where you, and over the course of time, where you look at guys differently than you did when they first came on the ballot. Unless it's a person, whether it be, you know, Eddie Murray or Ricky Henderson or Gwynn and Ripken, all seven guys who got in the, you know, six guys who got in the last 2 years who have all been first ballot Hall of Famers. You know, there are just guys who are, you know, they're going to be, their numbers are Hall of Famers no matter what. And so the other ones you evaluate over time and against who else is on the ballot during that period of time. And I think in a different era, you know, McGriff would get into the Hall of Fame. And if the ballot eligibility was still 15 years, like Jim Rice, who got in on his 15th year, Burt Blyleven got in his 14th. I mean, I evaluated Burt Blyleven much differently at the end of his tenure on the ballot than I did at the beginning, particularly when you look at how starting pitching has transitioned, and you know, guys don't pitch past the sixth or seventh inning anymore. You know, here's a guy who had 60 shutouts, numerous complete games, is number five on the all-time strikeout list, didn't have 300 wins, but I think eventually held up against what had transpired in the steroid era. He belonged in the Hall of Fame. I think at the end of 15 years, Fred might get in. At the end of 10, it's going to be very tough.
Sure. And I think also the sabermetric theories also help Burt Blyleven as well. There are a lot of push for him. And I think the same thing is going on with Tim Raines as well. A lot of sabermetrics are kind of pushing forward, and he's kind of getting a little bit of a bump up as well. The last person I wanted to talk about was Carlos Delgado, who has more than 400 home runs, but just got only 3.8% of the vote, and now he's off the writer's ballot completely. Is this the PED era that's kind of shining through in this situation?
No, I just don't think Carlos Delgado is a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. He's another one of those guys, you know, pretty much like the Golden Era ballot this year with the 10 guys who were on that, the 9 players. It's the Hall of the Very Good. He's not a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm.
So let's look ahead to 2016. The only real lock among the first-year candidates is Ken Griffey Jr. Trevor Hoffman also has a good shot at getting in. Is this a year where we will see a major jump in percentage for Piazza and Bagwell and Raines?
I disagree with you about Hoffman. Hoffman's a lock. I mean, this is a guy who, he had 601 saves. He is the... And I covered him pretty thoroughly throughout his career. This is a guy who I would say is the best friend, teammate, player, all the way down the line that I've ever met. He's the epitome of everything you'd want as a Hall of Fame player. There's not even anybody close. The only thing in his record that is a blemish as compared to Mariano Rivera is that his postseason numbers are pretty bad, but it's also a very small sample size because the Padres were only in the postseason, I think, 5 times during his career. So, and they were mismatched practically every time, particularly in the 98 World Series against one of the best Yankee teams of all time. Every time, the 2 times the Padres have been in the World Series, they played the best teams of that era. They ran into the Tigers in 84, who started 25-5 and were the best team. I think they were in first place every day of the 1984 season. This is the team the Padres wound up against, and they're 1-8 in the World Series. So I think Hoffman, to me, is a slam dunk. And that anybody would question that, to me, is out of their mind. But really, I mean, I think he's a better player than Griffey. I mean, Griffey had injuries. Griffey's career tapered off. I mean, you know, Hoffman had 1 shoulder surgery and then reinvented himself as a changeup pitcher without any velocity and pitched for another 10 years. It's amazing. I mean, after Griffey blew out his hamstrings in Cincinnati, he was never the same player. You know, and then you go to the benchmark. We were talking about the 500 home runs. Now 600 really isn't even a slam dunk to get you in. And I'll be interested to see what happens when Jim Thome gets on the ballot with 600 home runs. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player either. I mean, he is, but I don't think he's a first-year Hall of Fame ballot guy. I don't think Chipper Jones is a first-year ballot guy. Mm-hmm. But Trevor Hoffman, in my mind, is. And the second part of your question is, yeah, I mean, obviously, when you take in 2 years, you've taken 7 guys who deserve to be in the Hall of Fame off the ballot. I mean, Biggio should have gotten in his second year last year, but missed by 2 votes. So he got in this year. So that's 7 guys off the log jam. Now you have Piazza at 69. He went from 62% to 69%. And he's tracking towards 75%. I think he fell 28 votes short. I think there's probably a pretty good chance he'll get those 28 votes, if not next year, then certainly the year after. I don't think Reigns is getting into the Hall of Fame. He's at 50%. Basically, if he was at 60%, he might. But there are guys who peak and they also roll back. Gil Hodges, for all his vaunted credibility of being in the Hall of Fame, I mean, he peaked in his last year on the ballot at 60-something%. You know, he's the only guy, and I think he got 60% three times. The only guy in history who went to 60% and is not in the Hall of Fame. So he was on the ballot 15 years, and he was, he's gone through now 5 iterations of the Veterans Committee and not getting in. It's time to, like, shelve Gil Hodges to me. And I think the same thing about Reigns. Reigns is not going to make up 20%. And I think he's another guy, he goes into his 9th year on the ballot next year, he gets killed by the 10-year eligibility rule. You know, the Hall of Fame, by shrinking the ballot from 15 to 10 years, the eligibility rules on the ballot, I know why they did it. They want to get, no matter what they say, I think they want to get the steroid guys off the ballot as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And they basically said it really affects a very small amount of people who got in from 11 to 15 years. Well, I think 18 players in history got in. We voted 18 players from 11 to 15, most recently, as I mentioned, Bly Levin and Rice. Now, I'd like you to go, any Hall of Fame official, go to Bly Levin and Rice and tell them, you know, if we had changed the rules, you wouldn't have been in the Hall of Fame. I'd like them to tell those 18 guys who got in. That's a pretty high percentage of, we voted in 119 now. 18 players is like 10% of the people we voted in. It's not, and this is going to affect, Reigns, because maybe with 6 more years of eligibility, he'd have the chance for his vote total to creep up to 75%, mm-hmm. but it's not going to happen in 2 years.
All right. Great stuff, Barry. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
We are now joined by Joe Posnanski, a columnist with NBCSports.com. He's also written for Sports Illustrated and Sports on Earth, and is the author of 4 books. Joe, in your column prior to the ballot reveal, your votes for the Hall of Fame went to Bonds, Bagwell, Clemens, Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Mussina, Piazza, Tim Raines, Schilling, and John Smoltz. The notable person missing, of course, is Craig Biggio. But from reading your column, you stated that you wanted to put him in, as well as several others if you had the option to vote for more than 10. But what were the deciding factors in leaving Biggio off your ballot in favor of others such as Schilling and Mussina?
It was obviously a very tricky calculation. You know, there's kind of a weird mathematics going on right now when you have, in my mind, I thought there were 15 very solid Hall of Fame, like solidly Hall of Famers to me, that were on the ballot, and a couple of more that you could add on. So when you have 15 to 17 that you would at least like to consider voting, and you know you can only vote for 10, you sort of have to figure out how you're going to do it. And you know, different people did it different ways, and some people kind of voted for the players they felt like needed the votes the most, which I certainly understand. And some people felt like they would normally vote for, say, Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens, but with the way momentum is going, they're not going to get in anyway, so why spend that vote? My feeling on it was, at the end of the day, that it's my job to try to determine who are the best baseball players, and those are the players that go in the Hall of Fame. So I voted for the 10 best players in my mind. And it was very, very close. I came down to really 3 guys for the last 2 spots, and they were John Smoltz, Mike Piazza, and Greg Biggio. And I very, very seriously thought about voting Biggio, even though he was 3rd on my list for where I had him ranked, because I thought he'd need my vote the most. But then I thought that just isn't right. I didn't know at the time Mike Piazza You know, he came very close as well. He needed my vote just as much. And I thought John Smoltz was going to get in, and I feel like he's a Hall of Famer. So I went with my best 10, and, you know, if they change the balloting and I can increase it, I definitely would.
Okay, I was just about to ask that. I spoke earlier with Barry Bloom of MLB.com, and similar to you, he stated he could have voted for as many as 17. I then posed the question, and I'll ask it to you, does that mean, like you said, you could vote for 15 or maybe 17, does that mean you'd like to see an expansion of the ballots to where you could vote for more than 10 people?
Well, yes. Okay, I mean, it's sort of a two-part answer. Yes, I do think that they should expand the ballot, but I think that the voting at this point is so... what they need to do is change sort of the entire dynamic of it. And I don't think they're willing to do that or ready to do that, but as the way it's voted on right now, I don't think is right. I think it should be, you know, more of a ballot where you're really voting yes, no. I don't think that the ballots should be as stacked as they are. I think that they probably ought to take a little more control of it at the Hall of Fame. I don't think they will, and so I think they probably will, my guess would be they will tack on maybe a couple extra, so you'll vote for up to 12. The other thing about it is, though, that when this ballot was very, very unusual, and I think it's already shifting, but what's going to happen over the next few years is that these guys are going to start getting into the Hall of Fame. We obviously had four this year for the first time, and 50 years. We had three last year. So the guys are coming off the ballot, and I think that the idea of there being more than 10 guys on the ballot will probably dissipate over the next few years.
Now, on your blog, you did an experiment in which thousands participated in, and you revealed the results late last month. You provided people with two surveys. In the first, you gave voters could choose up to four players for the Hall of Fame, no more than that. Which is exactly the process of the Golden Age balloting. In the second survey, you allowed voters to vote, as you said, yes or no on each player individually. What stood out the most to you about that experiment?
Well, what I expected and what I did see was that there were going to be, because I put 10 players on there that I feel all have a very, very strong you know, majority for sure of people think they belong in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if they'd get 75%, but there's a majority of people who believe that they belong in the Hall of Fame. And I knew that, of course, when I gave them the second ballot, when they voted yes, no, that those would probably be pretty close to the numbers we'd get. But the first ballot, I knew that just the basic number game would keep a bunch of players that are very, very qualified out. So somebody like Jeff Bagwell, for instance, got well over the 75% necessary when people were voting yes, no, but I don't even think he got 20% because he was just stuffed out of the ballot because there were four players on the ballot who were better than him. So, you know, it was more of an experiment. That one specifically was related to the Golden Age ballot where, you know, as you know, two players fell one vote short, and I think that was just set up very poorly. I think that was... You're going to have a Golden Age ballot like that, you need to get somebody into the Hall of Fame. I mean, that's why you have the balloting. Clearly, the majority of people over there thought these guys were Hall of Famers, at least some of them were, and they were unable to vote for anybody because of the process. So it was really an attempt to look at the process directly. But in addition to that, I think it gave a pretty good clear view. When you overstuff a ballot like this, it's very, very difficult to get any kind of consensus, and I think you know, we've seen that over the last few years.
Yeah, I might be going off a little bit of a tangent, but when you mentioned the way the Golden Age ballot is done, it's the total opposite, it seems, of like what pro football does, where they have, I think they name like two older players, and it always seems like at least one of them gets through and gets voted in.
Yeah, they nominate a player to get in an old age ballot, and they always put one in. That's part of the process there. And obviously, it's a little bit different. Their whole process is different. You know, they have a small number of voters. They all get into a room together. They hash it out and argue. It's very secretive. It's not. I don't think it would be a particularly good process for Major League Baseball. I don't even think it's a good process for the NFL. But it works for them. They're happy with it. I think that in this particular case, what you had here was two guys who I wouldn't necessarily have put on the top of the list, but Tony Oliva and Dick Allen were guys that clearly had the vast majority. It wasn't like, if you asked yes, no, I bet you they would have gotten 15 out of 16. Yes, it's for both of those guys. But because they only got four votes, and because they, you know, people were you know, in other people's camps, Minnie Minoso was on that ballot, I thought was the most deserving guy. Louis Tiant was on that ballot, and so on. Those guys got pushed out, not because of the way they are as players and not because of the opinions of the voters, but because of the mathematics. And I think that was just a poorly conceived ballot. I would hope they would fix that next time around. Mm-hmm.
Another thing I talked to Barry Bloom about was the ongoing situation regarding Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. If I had the ability to vote, I would not vote for either of them at this point. Now, I know you did. The reason I would not vote for them is more because I'm personally not comfortable yet with them being in at this time. I think they should be enshrined eventually due to their worthy statistics, even though whatever they took is factored in. But for now, to me, it's like too soon. It's the negative aspects are still resonating to me. Now, since you voted for both of them, are you accepting of that theory that I posed?
Oh, I think everybody should have their own viewpoint on it. I don't view taking steroids in a time when baseball did not test for them, did not attempt to weed anybody out, clearly was tacitly, if not actively, encouraging players to do whatever it was necessary to hit home runs and put up big numbers. I think for us to now look back and see players playing generally by the rules that were accepted at the time, to go ahead and try to sort of punish them retroactively and not, you know, there's no consistency in my mind. Three managers were voted in unanimously just last year. All three were managers during that time. I mean, they clearly oversaw this era. So, and Bud Selig will go in, I believe, you know, very quickly as well. And I think they should. And I'm not opposed to those guys going in, but the best player of that generation, my generation, was Barry Bonds, and the best pitcher of my generation was Roger Clemens. And I'm not happy that they took steroids, or you know, assuming they did. I'm not saying I'm comfortable with it. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be looked at in a little bit different light. But they were still the best players of the era, and for me, that's how I vote. But I don't have any qualms or issues with somebody who says, you know, feels differently. It feels like, no, they cheated the game. They cheated themselves, and they shouldn't be in Cooperstown. I mean, I think it's an honest debate. The problem, I think, right now that we have is that we're having this debate every single year, mm-hmm. before the echoes of last year's debate have even faded, and I think it's not helpful. But we're just repeating the same things over and over again, and in some ways, the best thing that could happen would be for those guys to get off the ballot for 5 years, so maybe we could start thinking about this thing in a little bit clearer way.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I mean, I think they should eventually get, I think it's maybe we should just put it aside for a period of time. I'm not trying to play judge and jury and say, oh, they need to serve their time for what they did. It's just, I think it's like I said, it's too soon after all that's resonated with the steroid era. And then maybe if you look at them in like 10 years, you say, okay, you know what? You know, they had good careers. And like you said, the era they played in, there was really no regulations on performance-enhancing drugs, so they played within the rules.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, look, I think they were aware they cheated, but I think they were aware they cheated the same way that people were aware that they cheated when they, you know, used spitballs or they corked their bats or did all the things that people have always done to try to get a little bit of an advantage. I think what's really unfortunate right now, and the reason that I think that this is, you know, the thing I do disagree with is we're voting people in. I mean, people are getting voted in. We have no idea if they used steroids or didn't use steroids. There's no whispers about them. There's no sense that they did because they've never been caught or they never got caught up in anything. But I believe that steroid use was extremely prevalent during that time. I'm not saying everybody did it, but I think it was extremely prevalent, and I think it's very likely that over time we're going to vote people in who use steroids and use them prominently. I just feel like that's an inevitability because that was the time that they played in. And, you know, it's a very different thing when you talk about somebody who does test positive or comes out with a big admission at a time when it's clearly taboo and baseball clearly is trying to weed these people out. That's a little bit different story than baseball celebrating all the home runs, making all the money that comes from the home runs, us writers writing all of the glorious things about these people, and then a few years later saying, oh, well, we didn't meet. I just have a little issue with that.
Sure. One player that you are a big proponent of, and I've personally come around on, is Tim Raines. He made a big jump up to 55% this year, still 20% short. Many who argue in his favor compare him to Ricky Henderson, as Raines was the preeminent leadoff hitter in the National League during the 80s. But you use Tony Gwynn as a better comparison, correct?
Yeah, and I think the Ricky Henderson comparison is unfair to him. Ricky Henderson was one of the truly greatest players in baseball history. He's the greatest leadoff man, if you use that term for what those guys did. He was significantly better than Tim Raines because he was significantly better than anybody. So I think comparing him, and I think that's part of why he's not in the Hall of Fame right now, is he happened to play in the time of Ricky Henderson. If he had played 10 years before Ricky Henderson, he'd be in the Hall of Fame, and everybody would have been calling Ricky Henderson the next Tim Raines. It's all a matter of timing, and his timing was just kind of poor on that front. To me, Tim Raines is a pretty much of a deadlock Hall of Famer. I think you do compare him to Tony Gwynn, and their production was just so similar. I mean, their on-base percentages are almost the same. They got on base almost exactly the same. Raines scored more runs. Gwynn knocked in more runs. They were both corner outfielders at the same time. To me, Tony Gwynn got 98% of the vote and deserved every one of them. And I think that Tim Raines should have been in the Hall of Fame long ago. He made a nice jump this year, but he's only got 2 years left on the ballot, and it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough. I think he'll make another jump next year, and then it's going to be very, very close in his final year if he can actually get the 75%.
Yeah, his odds will get a little better in 2016 when the only real lock on the ballot will be Ken Griffey Jr. Trevor Hoffman, in my mind, should make it, but I can't really count him as a lock because some writers are going to have that bias against closers being enshrined. Even if he has more than 600 saves, would you agree that he's not really a lock at this point?
I don't think he's a lock. I'm going to be very interested to see the guy that I'm watching even more closely, because I think, look, in time, everybody's going to vote for Trevor Hoffman. He'll get in. But the guy I'm looking at is a guy like Billy Wagner, who had an amazing career, 400-plus saves and all the strikeouts and, maybe the fastest fastball of his generation and all of those things. Incredible, incredible player. I wonder what kind of support he's going to get. And he's a guy that I don't think is, not only do I think is going to be tough, for him to get into the Hall of Fame. He's a guy that I wonder what kind of support he's going to get at all, from the beginning. So closers are tough. It's just such a tough thing, and everybody knows Mariano's on the cusp. He's going to be up there in a couple of years, and he's the best ever, and everybody sees him as the best ever. And so Trevor Hoffman is going to be compared to Mariano Rivera in the same way that Tim Raines is being compared to Ricky Henderson, and that's going to be tough.
As for the holdovers, Mike Piazza will benefit from the lack of first ballot locks next year. What kind of jump do you think we'll see for him? It could be 75%. What kind of jump do you think we'll see for Mike Piazza as well as the likes of Bagwell and Raines?
Well, Piazza to me is a lock for next year. I think that Griffey and Piazza are both going to go in next year. I don't even think it's going to be that close. I think what did Biggio have this year, 82%? I would bet that Piazza gets something close to that. I think he's a dead lock for next year, assuming nothing new comes out or whatever. Bagwell is the interesting one. I think that it would help Bagwell for Piazza to do well. I think that they're both being held back by some of the same unfair whispers. So I think that, he'll probably make a little bit of a jump next year, but he's a guy that definitely could use Bagwell, could definitely use Piazza getting into the Hall of Fame. And then Raines, like I say, it's going to be very close. I think Raines probably gets into the 60s next year, and then it's going to need a big jump in its final year.
Well, it was great talking with you, Joe. Thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.